I still think we're going to have audits, and I think they're going to get done by CPAs. I just think we're going to see more and more of that move up the scale of firm size. Mm-hmm. So that we'll see the top 100 firms. You probably won't see very many audits done in the, say, within 10 years that aren't in with companies in the top 100.
Welcome back, folks. This is Future Proof. As always, I'm your host, Bill Sheridan. And what was it they used to say back in the 60s? Let your freak flag fly. Well, today we're going to let our geek flags fly. My guest, and this is a really good show, gang. My guest is Rick Richardson. He's a CPA and managing partner at Richardson Media and Technologies. More to the point, he's one of the deepest thinkers about current and future technology trends around. I mean, he studies this stuff almost religiously. And if you want to know what tech trends you should be paying attention to, keep listening. This is fascinating stuff. We'll get to my conversation with Rick here in just a minute. First, here's what caught my eye this week, and I'm seeing more and more of this kind of stuff. It's a report from the global staffing firm Robert Half and the Financial Executives Research Foundation. And I read about it on the Financial Management Magazine website. That's a publication of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants. The report found that despite significant advances in automation technology, staffing levels in accounting and finance are actually pretty stable. About half of U.S. and Canadian executives say they plan to maintain their current staffing levels, and 17% of U.S. executives and 22% of Canadian executives say they're actually going to expand their accounting and finance teams as a result of these new technologies. Here's how the author of the article, Drew Adamick, puts it. He writes, "Even as technology automates many traditional finance functions, companies need employees who can effectively translate, present, and strategically analyze data. That need is helping maintain or expand current staffing levels and driving expansion plans at finance departments." He goes on to quote Paul McDonald, who is a senior executive director at Robert Half, who said, "Digital transformation is creating change for business. To keep up with that transformation, these businesses need intellectual capital, so they are seeking to maintain their current staffs or to find new talent." So it kind of flies in the face of the doomsayers who have been telling us that robots are going to steal our jobs. And it reinforces the idea that to stay relevant and therefore to stay employed, we're going to need to learn some new skills so that we can do the machines, do the things that the machines can't do. So interesting report there that paints a slightly rosier picture of the future, I guess, than a lot of reports on technology that are out there. Speaking of technology, let's get on with this week's show. Again, my guest is, and I'm just going to call him a tech futurist, okay? Rick Richardson and the trends that we need to be watching. And although he's still bullish on the future of the profession, he says, we're definitely going to be disrupted in some pretty significant ways by technology. So what technologies are going to disrupt us? Well, certainly AI and automation and blockchain, we've all heard about those, but that's so 2017, right? You want to know what you really should be paying attention to? Try things like quantum computing or edge computing or something Rick calls tokenization. These things are coming and they're going to have a huge impact, maybe as soon as the next decade. So I guess now the question is, what are they? Well, I'm going to let Rick explain all of that, as well as, and we start the show with this, how to protect our home routers, which apparently are the latest targets of those meddling Russian hackers. So important stuff here, fascinating stuff. Here's Rick Richardson. So Rick, thanks for being here. What's going on with all of our routers all of a sudden? I've seen a couple of different articles, a couple of notifications saying they're not all that secure right now. What's the deal, and how are we supposed to handle it?
Well, the if you can believe it, it's Russia yet again. there's really a new threat out that's targeting both network attached storage devices and a range of routers, much broader than we originally thought. The malware is called VPN Filter. And unlike most of the other threats that come from sensor-based Internet of Things kind of things, This one's capable of maintaining a persistence even if you shut the device off and reboot it.
Oh, wow.
And so the only way to fix this sucker is to literally regen from a factory reset. So let me go back first and say that the important part to understand in terms of what it does is that it's literally spying on the traffic that's run through the router. And because of that, almost anything that you've done, whether it be with a secure site, it really doesn't matter, because going through your router, it's going to have access to both ends of the transaction, if you will. So from the perspective of getting rid of it, well, first of all, before we say get rid of it, Linksys, Microtech, Netgear, TP-Link, most of those routers, along with Asus and D-Link, are probably the most, there's some 70 different models. And all somebody has to do is Google VPN filter. You'll get the listing of all of the routers, and you can double check the model number against your own router to see whether or not it matches up. In order to get it fixed, what you first do is write down your Wi-Fi network names and passwords, and then do a factory reset on the router. First you make sure that the router has been updated with the latest version of its firmware. Once you've done the factory reset, then you can go in using the router's administrative software and get the username and password recreated so that you can reattach it to your Wi-Fi network and connect your various devices to it. So it is a bit tricky, but it is something that is absolutely crucial. They don't know how much of the router population has been infected, but it's very large.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask, how do we know whether or not our router's
been infected? You just don't. It's a very subtle thing. It leaves a telltale that if you take the router into somebody who can actually extract data off of its own firmware, can determine it, but you're not going to be able to. There's no easy, run a piece of software and have it tell you what's happening. So the answer is find out whether the router you're using is one of the ones that can be infected, and two, immediately get it updated with its firmware, factory reset it, and then set your passwords back up again.
Boy, that's just crazy. I mean, is this the world that we live in now, that we're going to have to, be cautious and just to kind of expect this kind of intrusion on a regular basis? Or,
well, I'm hoping not. I think that at least D-Link, Linksys, and Microtech have all said, along with Netgear, that they have learned about some manufacturing issues they need to fix downstream that keep things like this from happening. So we have to just keep our fingers crossed that the manufacturing industry starts worrying more about the security side as well.
That's scary stuff. On to other stuff now. I mean, you've got your ear to the ground technology-wise almost as much as anybody I know. So outside of Russian router hackers, what are some of the current tech trends that you believe will have the biggest potential impact on this profession?
Well, I could think, let's say six. We'll start with six.
Okay.
I'm going to go with number one, which is blockchain.
Okay.
Most everybody's heard about blockchain, most likely with respect to the Bitcoin cryptocurrencies.
Right.
But blockchain as a platform has an incredible potential to impact all sorts of other areas in both business and personal issues. You know, when you think about it, the internet was originally developed to be totally decentralized at its core, and it kind of got almost usurped in some respects by the internet giants and some of the governments. But I think blockchain is going to bring us back to some of that original intent, the ability to be able to have trust in the recording of transactions on a distributed basis is, I think, going to be pretty big.
I was going to say, you said that there are a number of areas that it could impact. What are some of them? How, for instance?
The first and foremost, I think, are smart contracts. Ethereum is one of the companies that offers the most in that particular area. But just imagine being able to have you and I you're over in Europe someplace and I'm in the Far East, and I'm going to ship you 600 tons of soybeans. And when those soybeans arrive at the shipping terminal in Europe, Internet of Things sensors are going to know that, that those 600 tons of soybeans arrived, and that'll be communicated back to the blockchain, and I get paid automatically. Okay. So the whole idea is you don't even have to have an intermediary, either in the form of someone that handles the actual bill of lading, but more importantly, the whole structure of payment and in what currency and the time frame for it, all of that's done automatically with a smart contract up front, and it's protected by blockchain.
Wow. Wow.
We're going to see blockchain in our food chain. The ability to be able to have restaurants and supermarkets be able to have a pedigree on food that's delivered either for consumption or for purchase. The ability to blockchain to track from the original planting of the crop all the way through its harvest and its shipment, knowing who harvested, who planted it, who farmed it, who harvested it, who shipped it, who cleaned it, all of those sorts of things are going to be done with a blockchain.
Yeah, that's huge from a couple of different aspects. From a health perspective, I think that's got huge potential. When you hear about, you know, salmonella outbreaks and things like that, being able to track that food back to its original source, I think that's a huge benefit right there.
Absolutely. And it's certainly going to affect the accounting profession. I mean, if we look at it today, we deal with companies where each side of a business transaction keeps its own books. Longer term, blockchain will provide the capability for both sides of the transaction to be recorded at the same time in comparable ledgers. And the ability of the CPA, particularly if they're doing an audit, to be able to see literally every transaction for the year and know they have everything. There won't be such things as confirmations anymore, because you'll go to the blockchain. You'll be given the authority to have access to that chain from the CFO of your client. And then once you've done that, your ability to literally know you have the entire inventory of every transaction for the year, and the ability to resummarize, look for outliers, look for problems, anomalies, whatever it might be that may be part of the audit process, being able to submit it to analytics, all sorts of stuff is going to be really crucial for the, I think, for the accountants.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I know, well, we could talk about blockchain forever. I know a lot of folks in this profession are worried about, you know, is my job going to go away? Am I going to be, you know, irrelevant going forward thanks to stuff like this? I mean, what are your thoughts on this stuff as a replacement for what CPAs do?
Well, I think it's going to be a disruptor. I still think we're going to have audits, and I think they're going to get done by CPAs. I just think we're going to see more and more of that move up the scale of firm size. Mm-hmm. So that we'll see the top 100 firms. You probably won't see very many audits done in the, say within 10 years, that aren't in with companies in the top 100.
Interesting.
And most of the big blockchain stuff is going to get done by the top four.
Wow.
They're investing huge amounts of money in the research into it. And also the work that's being done by CPA.com and the AICPA working with Wall Street.
Yep.
Wall Street has a blockchain association that is now looking into that same sort of stuff. So I think that's going to begin to provide more definition and opportunity for those firms in that 100 base, maybe below the top four.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay, so but that's blockchain. Right. That's number one. What's number
two? That's number one. Number two, voice search.
Okay.
We're finding out already that typing is fine for some things, but in the not too distant future, we are going to be in a position where typing is going to be like the difference between the command line and MS-DOS. an iconic-based do what you see is what you get kind of an interface.
Well, we're already getting there with things like, you know, Siri and Amazon.
Siri and Alexa. Like,
but how is it going to evolve?
Absolutely. And as more and more of that contextual searching capability gets built into voicing our responses, our ability to be able to, quote, express ourselves in a manner that provides us with the opportunity to get the exact data we want at the right moment. And with artificial intelligence in these pieces of software, they're going to remember the context the last time we asked for something. And they're going to say, well, do you really want this like you did last time? Or do you want to, is this really new? Or you want me to go back and pull off the last four pieces that we did? So the ability to have something that's smart, that's personalized, and that has that deeper learning sense built into it, I think is going to really make for tools people are going to really want.
Yeah, I'm sure you probably, saw the Yeah, yeah. The demo that I believe it was Google came out with a month or two ago, in which
that was spooky.
Yeah, their voice assistant.
That was spooky.
For those
a lot
who
of people didn't like it.
Yeah, if you didn't see it, folks, it was a voice assistant from Google that was interacting. It was scheduling appointments with human beings over the phone, and
the person on the other end of the phone didn't know that it was.
No, and it was it was spooky, but it was incredible too. I mean, this voice assistant was reacting to not just the words that the person was saying, but nuances in the conversation. It could understand somebody who had a heavy foreign accent. It really was incredible. And that seems to be where we're moving with this stuff.
Even to the level of, as the conversation went on, the voice assistant goes,
Right. Yeah. Crazy.
So you really thought you were talking to somebody.
Yep.
Which in most cases wouldn't be a problem if I were calling to something and got that.
Right.
The difference is it would bother me much more as it coming to me but like a robocall and having it seem much more like it was real and being able to respond to what I said. So,
sure.
But I think voice search is going to be big on our market list over the next couple of years.
Okay.
Number three, not so much for the accounting profession, but I think just overall in our life span is 3D printing. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say it is, I think it's going to first impact more than anything manufacturing, particularly the ability to be able to produce a part when it breaks rather than having to inventory parts or send away for them. Instead, you just literally reprint that part that you need and it goes into the machine that's needed for it. That capability is really going to have a huge impact. And when you combine that with artificial intelligence, where the devices themselves know when some of their parts need to be replaced, that the AI product will go out and look and say, wow, that turbine needs a new rotor. It's got 4,200 hours on it. And so before it's actually needed, it sends a signal back to the 3D printer to make a new rotor. And that rotor then is ready when it has to be replaced.
Yeah.
Now, the other one, and I just did a piece for one of my future issues of my newsletter, is body organs. I don't think we're more than 5 years away from having the ability to do simple stuff like livers, like gallbladders. I don't think we're going to see the heart right away, but I do think we will see other organs that can, in fact, be reproduced and genetically matched to our blood type and genome set so that the body won't reject it.
That's just incredible. That blows my mind. I mean, I had heard about things like artificial, you know, knee joints and hip joints and things like that being 3D printed, but actual organs, that's
yeah. Incredible. And the amazing part is that they're actually printing with these biomixtures, mm-hmm. And they're such that the combination of two things, one, the heat and the temperature that all this stuff happens at has to be at a level that doesn't allow the thing to die before it finished building it.
Oh, wow.
So the whole concept of how do you get these molecules to come together and form this kind of a, it's really crazy. It's way past my understanding,
yeah.
But to watch them do it in a lab is just, it's just incredible.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay. Number
four. All right.
Four.
So that's number three, 3D printing. Number four is actually 5G. Okay. 5G networks are coming next year. I think it will be the year 5G makes its first big impact. For your listeners, just so they understand, today, most everything we do in the mobile world is done on 4G LTE networks. Mm-hmm. These new 5G networks will have at least, they say, 10 orders of magnitude faster in bandwidth than what we've had in the past.
Wow.
It's going to provide the capability for multiple streaming sessions on single devices. If you could dream of Netflix, you know, streaming two or three things on the same network to different devices and not have any hiccups anywhere on your local network, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, that is incredible.
Speed's going to be a king there. The other thing 5G is going to be really important for, we got to do a little training here. One of the big issues that I mentioned last year in my speech on the future technology is edge computing. We talked about the cloud a lot for years, but when we get to the things like autonomous automobiles, these vehicles are sitting out at the edge of a network and have to make split-second decisions based on facts that from sensors that are being captured in multiple ways on the car itself, both visually, audio-wise, RFID, infrared, you name it. But all that data is being analyzed out at the edge, and then a decision's made that we have to stop it because somebody's in the pedestrian's in the walkway. The ability for edges to handle all that stuff is going to be so much better with 5G than it was with 4G. So the 5G networks are almost going to be a mandate, if for no other reason than because the edge also looks at other devices looking at the same network. In other words, if there's two cars facing you at an intersection, your car knows what those cars sensed as well as what you got. But the only way they got it is over a 5G network.
Okay.
So the faster you can get that data to those edge devices, the less opportunity there is for a failure of some sort. So I think 5G is going to be a big deal. We'll see it from Verizon and AT&T first. Certainly Sprint and others are saying they're going to be ready this next year.
For commercial customers like you and me?
Yeah, except they're going to start it. They're going to do it by city. So it's going to be a little like when Google rolled out the 1 gig fiber optic stuff that they offered in a select number of cities. They're going to start with an individual set of cities and bring transponders ready for that sort of a thing, and then work their way out to the rest of the network. So It's not going to all be there, but there'll probably be at least, I would say, some fairly large cities and have them pretty well set by mid to end of next year. Certainly by 2020, toward the end of 2020, we should see most everybody up on 5G.
Oh, that's great. I'm looking forward to some 5G.
And I don't think we're going to look at an increase in cost either.
No kidding. Yeah, it seems as these things get more powerful and do more for us, the price keeps going down, which is good too. So
we all know about the Internet of Things. Number five is the Internet of Everything.
Okay.
The Internet of Things has been around for a long time, but when you start putting smart homes, smart automobiles, all of these things on these same networks, the ability to have almost any device communicate with any other device is going to mean that the subtle differences in things like, assume you have this nice Tesla Model 3, let's say, and you just got it a few months ago and it's actually driving you home from work. The interesting thing is it's going to have the lights on, the garage door up, the house either warmed or cooled based on the season. And it's just by communicating again with a series of other Internet of Things sensors in your home. It's just unbelievable to realize how much these devices can handle on their own. It could be good enough that we would see people not even, for example, keeping their car at work. Imagine if you had a car like this, you'd have the car drive you to work, then you'd have the car go out and work for you all day. Uh-huh. Picking up people, dropping off folk, and then it knows it's got to get back to you by 4:30, 5 o'clock, whatever your
interesting
your end of work time frame is, and then take you home.
So my question on, you know, the Internet of Things or the Internet of Everything is, and I can imagine, you know, as new homes are being built, they're going to be built going forward with, you know, a lot of these capabilities kind of built right into these new homes. But for, you know, people who own a 40, 50, 60 year old home like me, I mean, how do we take advantage of some of this stuff in a way that's not, you know, cost prohibitive to putting some of these technologies to work in our...
Well, there are probably four or five major platforms. You need to pick a platform to start with. Mm-hmm. So you either pick something like HomeKit from Apple, the Google Home from Google, Bixby from Samsung, whoever it might be that you pick. Or it could be that you already have, say, for example, a security system from somebody like ADT or Vivint or one of those companies. Mm-hmm. All of them have partnered with one or more of these infrastructural systems. So once you've done that, you need a hub. And that hub is probably going to cost you a couple $100.
Yeah,
you're going to talk to it, whether it's an Echo from Amazon or a Google Home from Google or a HomePod from Apple. Those devices will then control the lights, the other things in your house, and
Okay. Those
are all doable at Home Depot or any at Lowe's, any of those places at reasonable prices. Philips is probably the biggest purveyor of the lighting stuff. There are a number of companies out with security packages like front doorbell videos and ringers from companies like Ring and others, you know, big enough that Google wanted to get into that, make sure they had theirs covered. So I don't think the cost is not going to be anywhere near as much. What you aren't going to see as much of is things like Windows, the ability to close window shades and do all those other things. That's going to be much more hard. I think it's going to be more difficult to have that retrofitted in an older house than when you build a brand new one.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing that a new home will do is more than likely it will include a mesh network that is hardwired. So you'll think of having like Ethernet hardwired throughout the house to a series of mesh routers in each room, and those routers manage whatever sensors are available in that room, whether it's lights, heating, ducts, or windows, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's fun to imagine stuff like that. Okay, so Internet of Everything.
That's number five.
Yep, number six.
And number six is what I'll call artificial personal assistance.
Okay.
That is, you know, if you've ever received an automated email before and then have it routed in your mail product based on the fact that it came from a certain source, that's a simple algorithm that somebody put into a rule in your mail program to allow you to do something. Okay. Imagine that there is a software product looking at your entire stream of email, being able to schedule meetings, remind you of a phone call, do whatever has to be done based on the communications you have. Will get smarter and tie in with things like we thought with voice search for things like phone calls you have where you commit to, okay, well, I'll get that to you by Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So now your voice assistant has listened to that and said, all right, you got a Tuesday commitment to get Bill Sheridan this particular document.
I need that now.
Right. We all do.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the six things I think are on the... at least more, I'll call it more immediate future.
Yeah,
there's some farther out stuff. How much time do you have?
Oh, we're doing. I can talk about this stuff all day. Let's go further down the road. What's coming at us
all that we might not even see? I'm going to go out, let's say, 6, maybe 8 years at the most.
Okay,
so
mid-2020s. All right.
And I'll give you five things. We're going to start with personalized medicine.
Okay.
Between the breakthroughs in mapping and understanding the human genomes, medicine is now almost to the stage that we'll have the ability to get prescriptions that are specific to our body.
Amazing.
So, for
example, what might that look like?
Antibiotic. Where you don't have to worry about any kind of side effect.
mm-hmm.
where it knows by your body what where it's needed to go and goes there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you only have to take half as much because it knows it's much more efficient in how it's going to handle the infection.
That's pretty incredible.
So instead of the one size fits all medicine, the medicines of the future, I think we're going to see are highly customized, unique to what they call bio-individuality of the patient itself. So that's one.
Is that just theory at this point, or are people actually?
No, they're working on it. They have it already for certain cancers where they can actually provide a pill that has inside it a processor. The processor can actually get the pill down into a tumor and look for the area that's missing the oxygen. I don't know what there's a name for that particular part of the tumor, but that's the part that's most susceptible to death.
Okay.
So being able to hit that and then literally destroy the that particular cancer cell happens as a result of this hypoxic computing capability that these little pills have. So, okay. But again, as I say, we're 6 or 8 years out, but we're going to start seeing the ability to customize at least certain internal medicines to a specific body type or an actual individual person.
Okay. Okay. So personalized medicine.
Yeah.
What else is on your radar?
The digital banking. And here, the idea of Bitcoins, Bitcoins came out and kind of flared, fizzled. I don't know what you want to say to it. It's interesting that people talk a lot about it. I'm going to talk next about tokenization, which I think is more important. But here, I think the whole idea of providing a way for payment of electronic transactions typically triggered by other than a person, i.e., by a smart contract, by a sensor, by some other means.
Okay.
That's, to me, is digital banking. Or at least digital payment from that perspective.
Okay.
So I think we're going to see some more there. I don't know what's going to actually happen yet, but I don't think it's going to be as important that it be cryptocurrency as that it be pervasive and that everyone will agree to accept it and that it won't interfere with the concept of legal tender. And what is, whether sovereign nations have the right to create their own currencies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you mentioned a word a minute ago that kind of perked my ears up, tokenization?
That's number three.
Explain what that is.
Okay. The best way to explain it is the first time I ever saw it was with Apple Pay. And the way Apple Pay works is you register a credit card with Apple. Mm-hmm. Apple has your credit card number. Your mobile device does not.
Okay.
Your mobile device has a special token that's tied to Apple.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to buy something, the device that you put your phone or your watch up to in order to pay for something with your credit card, instead of sending the credit card number to that terminal, the software in the mobile device sends a token to the terminal, which is forwarded to the clearinghouse.
Okay.
So you've never given away your credit card number in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. The person who's accepting the payment gets immediate credit, but they never know the card number. They never know what you bought. They only know the amount and the time. So the time, the amount, and that it was paid for, so that it becomes a valid, if you will, payment currency. Consumers and businesses are developing systems now to try and protect their own data, and tokenization is one of the best ways to do that. The blockchain is going to be a device for implementation of tokenization because the blockchain can be that infrastructure on the back end that actually stores and records all the stuff as it happens. But the idea behind it is to stop this laissez-faire, you know, pull out your credit card, give it to a waiter in a restaurant who walks away from you with it,
right?
Does whatever they want with it and brings it back to you. Instead of that, they'll bring you a small terminal. You'll put your watch or your phone up to it. It'll be paid and done. And nobody knows. And again, the credit card companies love it because they were big on the issue of physical possession of the card before, so that they would actually price for vendors who were accepting the cards. Mm-hmm. They would have a different price if you took the number over the phone versus if you had the card in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference in those two rates was directly related to their loss ratio of people literally stealing numbers and just calling in and using a call-in card number. So now with tokenization, I think we're going to see some huge differences happening in that being able to send pseudo data instead of the real thing and still have it validated, recorded, and authorized.
That strikes me as a huge step forward in the whole cybersecurity area. I mean, and it sounds as though it could be used for any kind of data.
Absolutely.
Any kind of personal data, not just money transaction. But
yep.
Have we come to a point where we're experiencing the end of cash? I mean, are we becoming a cashless?
I keep saying so, but I still carry $200 in my wallet with me.
Yeah.
I think everybody does. But I think on balance, probably the post-millennial, whatever the next group below the millennials is,
mm-hmm.
that group that's currently in their 14, 16 years, my grandkids.
My daughter, for example.
They're literally just not going to carry it. There's no reason for them to, and they won't. They'll just do everything electronically. And the fact that it's so much easier to steal from somebody, you can't steal if you don't have, you can steal a phone, but if you don't have your face on it, you can't get into it,
right.
Or fingerprint or whatever it might be. So I say we aren't going to have, I think we'll have cash for quite a while, but I think it'll become special, actually, grandparents giving real cash to kids.
You know? Oh, wow. Yeah.
I don't think they'll ever turn it down either. I'm surprised.
Okay, so tokenization. Anything else on that list that you were...
I got two more quickies.
Okay, all right.
Last mile transportation.
Last mile transportation?
The last mile, okay. We currently have ride-sharing services like Uber and Lyft, but those are really designed more to replace the intermediate trip. The trip from the train station to your home or from the train station to your office that might be 10 blocks away, something like that.
Uh-huh.
Those are starting to, we have a whole series of startup companies that are starting to look at electric scooters, e-bikes, companies like Scoot and Bird and Lime Bike and Jump Bike. We're just at the front end of stuff that's going to provide the capability to not have to walk,
mm-hmm.
and be able to get there quicker and be able to either subscribe or own or timeshare or whatever the service that would allow you the access to that sort of transportation. So,
okay.
A little different cut at that.
Yep.
And the last that I put out a little bit further out is quantum computing. And that one there, the two big companies, both IBM and Google, are really in a race to try and create the ultimate quantum machine. It's clearly the next generation of supercomputers. Scientists are using it now to decide whether or not to add new elements to the periodic table. Higgs-Boson and all the stuff that's associated with these quarks and all the rest of that stuff. They need computing that is so fast, so big, that the ability to have it handled with quantum physics is just huge.
Yeah, I was going to say, in lay terms, can you describe how quantum computing differs from what we're using today?
Not without a long, discussion.
But it's basically centers around quantum physics, right?
It's instead of the traditional electronics, we're actually working with products that use photonics.
Okay.
So we're using light rather than electrons. And that's that we get usually 2 to 5 orders of magnitude difference in capability, particularly when you're communicating on a motherboard of the machine itself. The whole concept of quantum physics is we think in digital machines in ones and zeros. Quantum computing thinks in ones, zeros, and nones. And a non is something that isn't either a one or a zero. And it only comes into play when an equation can't find a solution in the interim for a problem.
Okay.
So you already realize, I see your eyes glazing
over. Yeah, you lost me already.
So the issue is, I think it's something to watch for. IBM's probably got the first and the biggest possibility to make a huge splash. And if I were a real betting man, I would buy some IBM stock just for that one reason alone. And I think if they can put Watson inside of a quantum box, I think they could, they'll rule supercomputing for another decade or two.
So is this the answer to, so I keep seeing, articles, signs that are people estimating that Moore's law. So this idea that our overall computing power of our machines doubles every 18 to 24 months. A lot of people are saying that we're starting to see signs of that slowing down or maybe even starting to decline a bit. Is something like quantum computing an answer for that? That's going to keep Moore's law in play for the foreseeable future?
Once it's really working at a level where it's commercially viable, I think we're going to see an acceleration.
Oh, wow.
the old adage that says the speed at which things change right at this moment will never get any slower. Uh-huh. It'll only get faster. And so in terms of the size of these devices, they're going to get smaller and smaller. I just did an article for my newsletter on a set of Internet of Things processors that are the size of a grain of salt. And so they're so small, they can fit into almost anything. It's not like you have to build a sensor big enough to hold the processor, because the processor can get stuck on. You barely see it at the end of your fingertip.
Yeah.
So from the size perspective, I think Moore's law is going to keep going. From a speed perspective, we'll probably see some big step that will push it forward, probably a couple orders of magnitude, and then probably have it pick up.
That's a little scary.
Yeah.
Which leads to my next question. Is this profession moving fast enough to keep up with this stuff, or can anybody?
The answer is no.
Yeah.
We still have an 80-hour CPE requirement. I know a lot of people hate me for saying it, but I think if I were the king of the CPA profession, I'd require another 40 or 80 hours just on technology.
Wow.
And you cannot learn enough. It is so clear to me from trying to track this stuff every day. And I'm blessed in not having to practice, being semi-retired. I don't have to worry about client performance every single day. So I spend most of my time trying to worry about what's coming that's going to impact the profession. Mm-hmm. And it is just so clear to me that if there was any one thing that you've seen, it's that the lifelong learning is what it's going to turn into. Mm-hmm. It's going to turn into a situation where the job you start with is certainly not the job you'll end with.
Yeah.
And in between are going to be a whole series of opportunities that the bright people in this profession are going to figure out how to build for themselves rather than run into like a wall that just gets thrown in front of them and then they have to do something. Mm-hmm. So this ability for lifelong learning, the only way it happens is much more exposure to what's happening out there. And the only way to do it, if you aren't watching it, you just don't even see the changes. I mean, look at the New York cab drivers. It only took 2.5 years. I mean, who would have ever thought that a medallion that cost over $500,000 would drop to less than 80 grand in 2 years and literally now be almost worthless? Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody would have. And yet it's happened. Now, there hasn't been all good out of that. There's still issues associated with those companies and how they operate. And, you know, so it isn't like it's been solved, but the whole issue of knowing it was coming, we at least have a little more grace period in which we have an opportunity as a profession between blockchain and intelligent assistance and 5G and all the stuff we talked about today. All of that stuff, it takes time to understand it. It takes time to figure out how that might impact one, two, or three of your clients. And your ability to be a trusted advisor and the guy who they go to from a strategic thinking perspective, you got to be current, and you just can't not be. You know?
So what's the first step? What kind of tips would you offer to, you know, your average accounting and finance pro to start scanning the horizon a little bit more and staying up with this stuff?
What a cheap lead in. They should subscribe to my newsletter. It comes out every Sunday. It's called Technology This Week. You can get a subscription to it at technologythisweek.net. I really think it helps. It is, people said, how could you put out something every week? And I did it for a year before I ever started offering it.
Yeah.
I did it for a year just to see if I could actually do it. And yet the more I do it, the more I realize, my God, it's faster than a week sometimes. Sometimes I'll finish a whole issue by Thursday. I send my newsletter out on Sunday. Thursday, I finish the newsletter. Friday, I have to rewrite two articles just because of what happened between Thursday and Friday.
Yeah.
So it really is incredible. And I try to cover not just accounting stuff, but daily life stuff, all sorts of things. And you've seen a lot of the stuff that I've done. But so that's one thing. The other thing I think is to find a good repository of a news collection. Whether it be Flipboard or any one of those products, but something where you can kind of tailor and tell the software, listen, I'd like to see articles on the following topics. And being able to let some other device go out there and scour for things that are important for you to look at. I currently have 73 of those subscriptions, and I spend 3 hours a night doing nothing but culling through articles.
Yeah.
And it's the only way I can find it all, because it's just happening so quickly with such large volume that there isn't any other way to do it. So I think just reading your tush off is a pretty important part of it.
And read and learn, yeah.
Those sources is pretty important.
You said that earlier, that notion of lifelong learning. I think
it really is.
Yep. Well, Rick, listen, we could talk about this stuff all day, but it's always fascinating to have this conversation with you and to hear your thoughts. So thanks so much for being here. I do appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me.
That was Rick Richardson, managing partner of Richardson Media and Technologies. You can learn more at richardsonmediatech.com. And if you want to stay on top of the technology trends that are impacting our lives, subscribe to Rick's weekly newsletter, which is called, strangely enough, Technology This Week. You can subscribe at technologythisweek.net.